You're listening to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig. In 2013, in a boatyard in Reedville, Virginia, in the United States, I came across an old, sun-bleached boat named Ave Del Mar. I learned that long before she became mine, she had sailed around the world. She's been through the Panama and Suez canals, has cruised in the sunny Mediterranean, and has rounded the infamous Cape Horn. Now she's begun a new journey, with me. I tell tales of the glory and the crushing heartbreak of sailing, and I talk to some of the wonderful characters that I meet along the path as Ave Del Mar and I sail the world together. Time goes forward, go and catch your jet, you will find your moment. Time goes forward, stay and have a sniff, let's dream about the future. Welcome to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, recording this week from Oak Island, North Carolina, just outside of Southport, a little harbor town that a lot of people know. And I have the pleasure and honor of being joined today by Carolyn Sherlock of the Boat Galley. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Things are absolutely going well here. We have a beautiful summer day, not much breeze in the harbor. It's just picked up in about the last 10 minutes, so there's a little bit of cool.
And where is here? You're down in Florida?
Sorry, yes. I am in the Florida Keys in Marathon, Boot Key Harbor. We're calling home for the time being, basing ourselves out of here.
Awesome. And I have been down there as well when I was on my way back into the States from Jamaica, as you know. I'm proud to say that I am now again sleeping under a sheet at night. That's how far north I've gone. It's like the throes of winter.
Such a shocking concept.
Well, I remember staying on Ave Del Mar down in West Palm Beach, and like all I want is for it to cool off enough at night that I might think that pulling a sheet over some part of my body seems like a good idea. But no, I just laid under the fan and sort of sweated.
No, the only thing we use the sheet for here is on the nights that are really still and the no-see-ums come out.
Yeah, that's good protection.
And then it's already hot, but you pull up the sheet anyways.
I'm already sweating, may as well not get bitten. Well, I don't know how it might be possible, but if there's someone out there who doesn't know Carolyn or what she does, she is what, you know what? Maybe I should let you tell about you instead of me. Why don't you take 30 seconds and tell us what you do and who you are?
Thanks, John. I'm on my second cruising boat, 10 years on two different boats. My husband and I have cruised a little over 10,000 miles, and now I write the blog, The Boat Galley, which started out as being mostly cooking on a boat tips. And after about 500 articles about stuff like that, decided that there was just way too much other fun stuff to talk about. So now I talk about pretty much anything having to do with cruising, equipment, boat projects, the lifestyle, the whole nine yards.
Awesome. And if someone's looking to catch up with all of this great advice from you, where do they go?
They go to theboatgalley, GALLEY.com.
Do you know why we call it a galley?
No, I don't.
Neither do I. That was like a loaded question, wasn't it? Does that make me like the prosecuting attorney? You're not supposed to ask a question if you don't know the answer
I thought you had an answer ready and waiting that you were going to tell me.
I know. I realized as I was asking it, it sounded like I knew what the heck I was talking about. But yet again, I don't. That's my claim to fame. You're just going to have to deal with it. So, yes, for anyone who hadn't known, Carolyn is absolutely a blogging and boat life rock star in the cruising world, and she's our answer person for everything. So Carol and I were chatting not long after my return to the States with my buddy Larry aboard Ave Del Mar. We anchored down in Florida and chatted a bit, and we thought maybe we should hang out for a podcast together and talk about all this stuff that happens on sailboats when you're cruising, when you're coming back in the country, when you're out there trying to figure out how to do it, not so much the sailing, but the experience of it. So Carolyn was nice enough to sit down with us for however long this takes, and we're going to chat. So I want to start with talking about re-entering the country or culture shock or whatever you might want to call it. And, I didn't have the joy of witnessing me from the outside looking in right after I got back to the country from Jamaica, but I can assure you, pulling into Boot Key Harbor off Marathon, Florida, I was in shock. I had never been there. I wasn't prepared for just the change in the vibe of the anchorage, the change in the vibe of who's there. It had been eons since I had been in a harbor that had like permanent liveaboards. It's just not something that existed where I was. And I was having a hard time sort of getting my head around what it was I was coming back to. And apparently I'm not unique in that experience.
Absolutely not. And I think one of the big things that happens most of the time from, most of us coming back from anywhere is that you've been on a passage coming back. So first of all, yeah, it's all wildly different than where you were, but you come in sleep exhausted. And that makes it all 10 times worse trying to cope with it. You're trying to figure out where you're going, what you're doing. And really all you want to do is curl up and get a shower. Get a shower first, probably, and then curl up and go to sleep.
Well, you can curl up in the shower. It's a boat. I can't curl up in the shower. I don't have a shower.
Yeah, I was
But I
going to
can
say
curl up in the cockpit.
it's my back deck. Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I would say it's funny that I know I can look at myself and say rather analytically, ooh, you're feeling this way because you're somewhat sleep deprived or dehydrated or whatever it may be. But recognizing it doesn't make it go away. So you know it's there and you understand you're in a bit of a compromised state, but it doesn't all magically get better just because you're willing to admit that out loud to yourself.
No, and I mean, for us, coming back to the U.S., we flew back actually most of the times that we went, although coming back from Bahamas and so forth. But and we were coming back from Central America, Mexico, which are not quite like Haiti and Jamaica for you. But we came back from such totally different cultures. I remember the first time I came back, I had not driven a car in over 2 years. And it just so happened that my flight pulled in, and by the time I got all my luggage and got to the car rental place and everything else, I pulled out at 5:05, and I went from the parking lot directly on to the Indianapolis Interstate.
Oh no. Oh.
At 5 o'clock rush hour traffic, and I was absolutely blown away by the experience. I mean, I just, and this was where I had lived. I mean, I lived and worked and drove
Right.
these roads.
Not like it was a strange place.
Yeah, it wasn't a strange city, but it was still like, what in God's name am I doing here? How fast are these people going? How many cars are there? And where
So
in.
I want to interrupt you. The fast thing to me was interesting. Not so much really about the speed. I'm very much an energy person about people, about everything. But there was just such a frenetic energy about the going fast that I found unsettling. It wasn't so much analytically wondering what they were late for and why they were driving. It 65 is too fast, you should go 40. There was just always a rushing energy. And I can assure you, between Bahamas, Haiti, and Jamaica, and sailing, I hadn't encountered a rushed energy in many, many months. And it was shocking and unsettling. And they rushed. Even at Boot Key Harbor, they rush, on their dinghies to get up to the dinghy dock and then the cars, and there was just an energy that made me nervous and somewhat unsettled. And then I was, because I'm brilliant like this, thought the first thing I should do is go out and find a bar and have a beer. And you live there, so you know. So I walked up to the marina and went out to the main road, which is this 5-lane death strip that I don't think has a curve in it for 75 miles through this. It's just straight as far as the eye can see. And you know, big box stores and traffic lights, and everyone's going 70.
And you know, this real, and I mean, compared to the rest of Florida, this is the laid back section.
Yeah. So, but that speaks to what it is, and it's not about judging the society here. It's really just about, you're so embedded in all of it experientially. You're embedded in the slow pace while you're out there. You're embedded in that slow, long sail back. You know, for me, it was about 9 days. We didn't even have wind. It was the slowest sail ever. So it was, you know, boat chores, cooking breakfast for Larry, having a coffee in the cockpit. Are we dying from the sun? Let's sit under the umbrella. You know, that for 9 days, and ended with that. Just, yeah, we do. We have a lot of cars. We've got a lot of stores. We've got a lot of wonderful assets that we zip around in cars to get to. And that energy was unsettling.
The other big thing, at least for me, when I come back to the States, as always, I realize that I'm the one that says hi and waves to everybody, and they all look at me as though I am stark raving loony.
Yeah. You know, it's fun. I've discussed that with a lot of people. A buddy of mine, Benjamin, was talking about being anchored somewhere down at St. Martin, maybe somewhere down in the Caribbean. And he's like, I'm sitting on my boat, and they'd go buzzing past me on their dinghies, and I'd wave. And he said maybe a third of them would wave back. So I think that's also different everywhere, and it depends on who's buzzing by in their dinghy and where they're from and whether or not it's a part of their culture. But I am also that waver, but I do it here and get a lot of weird looks.
Yeah, but also, I mean, when you go to most any other country in the world, people want to make connections. They do.
Yes.
You see somebody on the street, and they don't give you a hi, how are you, just as sort of a mumbled hi, how are you. They're like, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
And
yeah, and it means, how are you doing today? And they're ready to converse about it.
Yes. And how are you doing is an actual question.
Yes, absolutely. You want to know who's the best about that? The Rastafarians in Jamaica. There is no quick passing, you know. There was a guy we used to call the almond guy, because he stood under this almond tree and sold ganja. We just called him Almond Man. But every time you'd say hi to him, it was eye contact. How are you doing today? Yeah, I'm on this and chat. It was a chat always. And just whether it was someone you passed every day or not made absolutely no difference. But there's a shift in pace. There's a shift in the pace of the people. You know, it's not like they're driving slow in all these other countries, but there is definitely a change in the energy about it all. But you somehow get through. I think that I told you once that, what did I call my reacclimation therapy? I called it, I don't remember, it was a...
Acclimation by intoxication?
That was, reacclimation by inebriation. That's what it was. Thank you. I'm glad you remembered. And I'll tell you, kids, I'm not recommending this, but I can tell you, if you're numb for several days, after a while you forget that you were freaked out about the fact that you're back, and then you just go about and do your things and go to the grocery store and buy cheese just because you can. So, well, I tell you what.
Well, that's actually a good question. So what was your first thing, the first thing you craved?
Cheese. Absolutely. Cheese. 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 I don't have refrigeration. So the only cheese, I would buy certain cheeses sometimes when I was in the islands and store them. I would put it in a Ziploc bag with extra virgin olive oil. In the Bahamas, you could still get feta cheese. There was no cheese in Haiti. And there was one brand of white cheddar cheese in Jamaica that I didn't buy when I was there, because it had like a smiley face on the front, and it was just a block of white cheese, and it said like Lucky Cheese, or I don't remember what it was called, but I thought it was going to be gross. And it wasn't until I was back in Florida that my friends Sergio and Fabio aboard the Italian ship, the Adriatica, had purchased some and had it on their boat. And they're like, it's white cheddar, it's delicious. Listen, I don't want to cut you off. We're up against a break. We're going to dash out, take care of some business. This is Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, joined today by Carolyn Sherlock. We're going to step away for a second, and we'll be right back.
Bonnie Las Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Las is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ringnetter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, There's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Las Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielascharters.com.
Hi, I'm Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Welcome back to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Hurlick, talking today with my friend Carolyn Sherlock from the Boat Galley, theboatgalley.com, Boat Galley on Facebook, Boat Galley on Instagram, and the cookbook, The Boat Galley. Did you say that in the beginning? You can go buy that cookbook. It's a phenomenal thing.
No,
toot your own horn.
I didn't, but you know how I actually first got to know you was from the other book, Storing Food Without Refrigeration. You were one of my proofreaders and suggestion makers.
I'm probably more suggestion maker than proofreader. I don't think I found any errors. That doesn't mean there weren't any there, but I didn't see them.
No, but seriously, as someone who's been cruising without refrigeration, you gave a lot of really good ideas, and I thank you for that.
You're very welcome. That was a lot of fun. It was so interesting to me when I found, through God love the internet, through Googling around, that like the Women's Presbyterian Cookbook from 1862 or something. And there was a scan from this thing, and it talked about preserving butter in brine. And that was among the things that kept me definably, perhaps, sane while I was underway. I had a bilge full of butter. I was still in Haiti and maybe Jamaica, I don't know, eating butter that I'd purchased months and months before in West Palm Beach, Florida, that was tucked away in the bilge in brine. Only butter I ever had that I didn't like was butter that I bought down there that I thought was no good when I took it home. So that one fed to the fishes. But the stuff from South Florida made it fine all the way through. So what's the name of that book again?
And you know, it's funny as you're cruising in those foreign countries and so forth. It's the little things that somehow seem to be luxuries all of a sudden, and like, ooh, look what I've got.
Okay, all right. So you're hitting on a button here for me, which is that those things on the boat that I thought were going to be brilliant, but I never used, were things that I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll bring it, and I love it and use it all the time, or whatever it may be. Things like, I was going to be the sprout master. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm pescatarian, so I eat seafood, but I don't eat beef, pork, and chicken, although I'll admit when I was in Jamaica, I ate jerk chicken because I was in Jamaica, and it's jerk chicken, and it's just that good. If jerk chicken was a drug, I'd be in rehab. That was so good. Anyway, I was going to be the sprout master because I love eating that stuff. I never sprouted a damn thing in 4 years on my boat. I tried. I have zero counter space. Water is always sort of a luxury on my boat. I don't carry much water. I don't have a water maker. You got to rinse the sprouts. Yes, I know it's easy. I don't need everyone to send me emails telling me that it's not complicated. I've had people give me books. I never sprouted anything except maybe scabs on my feet from kicking deck fittings in the dark when I was going out to do things. Have you sprouted?
No, I have not. But actually, all of that brings up actually 2 points. First of all, when we were buying our first boat, we were like, no way do we care about having a water maker. That is just ridiculous. No way we need
luxury.
But the boat that we happened to find and like otherwise had a water maker on.
Right.
It is an absolutely wonderful invention. We love the thing. And in roughly a minute here, you're going to start hearing some background noise, which is a water maker being turned on.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So I don't have a water maker on Ave Del Mar, but I am adept at making friends with people in anchorages who have water makers. They're like, we have plenty of water. I'm like, oh, how convenient. I'll be back with jerry cans.
Well, that's like last summer over in the Bahamas. We were having a wonderful time in the berries with the McMermaids. I don't know if you know them and know them on Instagram and so forth. That wonderful family of five on a 29-foot boat. And everything was wonderful except that they were running out of water. And it was like, Well, hey, you know, we've got plenty of solar going on. We can make you some water, no problem.
There you go.
And so we got conch fritters in payment.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there's always payment in kind somehow. Your water maker sounds a little chitty-chitty-bang-bang-like back there.
That's how the water maker sounds.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll...
It makes an entire 3.5 gallons an hour, which when we're here at a marina is about one day's drinking supply. I mean, in the summer here, we just go through water like crazy.
Sure.
When we're out at anchor, we end up running it a couple hours because we're showering and so forth as well on board.
Sure. Yeah. That's one of the things that I also always claimed I would never have and is on my list of things to look into before I leave again. I will go out again when the boat's ready and I'm ready, even if I don't have one. But it is no longer off the list of things that I would consider because I've got so much available electricity because I don't have refrigeration. My electricity really runs the single sideband radio in the morning so I can check into the weather and the nets. And my stereo throughout the day so I can listen to music, because otherwise I have to listen to the voices in my own head. So, yeah, I never sprouted, but, and here's something that I think you know I do, I did ferment kimchi. There was pretty much, over the course of the last 2 years, I doubt you could find 7 days that there wasn't fermented kimchi available, or at least a day or so away from being available to eat on my boat, which is an awesome thing because I do it with green cabbage. It's supposed to use Napa cabbage, bok choy, but you can't really get that down there. But green cabbage is everywhere. And when that's...
And it lasts forever.
It lasts forever in its own form. You can eat salads from it. But then, you know, when you ferment it into kimchi, you release all that vitamin C and all those probiotics. You're doing that same sprouting thing where you're changing the chemistry of the item. And that I did do. I also surprisingly popped a lot of popcorn. Which might be common, I don't know, but I've really never met anyone else that just randomly 2 or 3 or 4 nights a week pops popcorn for a snack on the boat in the evening, but I did.
You're going to have to talk to Dave because on the previous boat, where we had a microwave on the previous boat, don't now, but with the microwave on board, there was at least one bag popped every day.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't have a microwave, but this, you know, I can tell you that doing popcorn stovetop with salt and a little extra virgin olive oil is a treat indeed. And the other weird thing that I got that I remember someone looking at me and going, why in the world? You're never going to use that, was dental tools. I was in an antique store just wandering around in this little case they had used dental tools, you know, picks and, you know, hooks and whatever. Pardon me, I never went to dental school. But they are the most spectacular stainless. They're strong. They're sharp, and man, you can do so much with those little scrapers and hooks and the little flat spatula-like looking thing that I guess they use to smush filling stuff into cavities in your teeth. That was one of the strange things that I got that I used frequently to get a washer out that dropped, you know, in between two boards in the floor, or to pick caulk out of something or whatever it may be. I know I'm certainly not alone on the dental tool thing. I've seen those on lots of boats since. Do you have dental tools?
No, we don't. Another one that we did use a number of times, I don't know if they're common or not, but when I was growing up, we always had what I called an olive picker. You remember the big, tall, old bottles of olives? And it was a little device that you could reach down in there and it would grab the, you know, an olive out of the bottom and you could pull it out. And that little type of a thing has been fantastic for getting things out of the bilge, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I dropped a flashlight in the bilge once that I wasn't smart enough to have wrapped around my wrist. And I spent 40 minutes looking for that doggone flashlight in that murky bilge water. Until I realized that it hadn't actually fallen in the bilge. I had dropped it while I was over the bilge, but it bounced off of something and fell down into a little crevice. Meanwhile, like I said, I spent a good 45 minutes digging around in that nasty bilge water trying to find the flashlight, because all I could picture was the strap handle from the flashlight jamming up the pump impeller blades on the bilge pump, and the boat. That's when something was going to go wrong and the boat was going to sink. So I had this... Here's another thing. I had a folding bike, and the folding bike I had was a gift from a dear friend of mine. It had been his on his boat. This is my friend Chip. And he and his wife Tammy cruised for 5 years on an island pack at 380, and they had these awesome, beautiful, brand new, gorgeous folding bikes. I was the caretaker, if you will, of their boat for quite a while in Annapolis when she was for sale. Did, you know, would go over and clean her out and open her up and air out if there was a showing, or come over and oil the wood. You know, spliced a few lines, did things like that. And in thanks for that, I was given this folding bike. I don't know if I've had anything on my boat that caused me more stress than that folding bike, because it was a really nice folding bike that in their boat lived in one of the spacious cockpit lockers, the lazarettes, you know, which are themselves perhaps 6 feet down. You could drop a Volkswagen down in there and lose it after it's in there. I've got no room for it in any locker on my boat, so it lived forward on my foredeck under the dinghy, wrapped up in plastic, and then every month I would sort of unwrap it and douse the whole thing with a can and a half of WD-40, trying to keep it from rusting away. And I would stare at it while it got progressively rustier and feel guiltier and guiltier that I was letting this beautiful gift rust away in real time. That water maker is cracking me up. I'm telling you, chitty chitty bang bang. I'm just waiting for the poof, poof.
I'm hoping it's not too awful in the background.
No, it's lovely. It's we're painting a picture. It's a part of the sound of being on a cruising boat.
It's the reality of living on the boat. Yes,
it really is. If I were on Ave, I can assure you, you'd hear creaking because everything on that boat creaks. But eventually, when I made it to Georgetown in the Bahamas, I sold the folding bike, not because I didn't want it, and I had used it. I used it a lot when I was in West Palm Beach. I used it in Charleston. I used it in St. Augustine. But it was stressing me out because...
But then you got out of the U.S.,
well,
right?
And that's what something... And I think if I'd kept going, I think I would have gotten to places where I wanted to use it again. But where I wasn't using it, because anywhere you go in the Bahamas, all you have to do is turn around on the side of the road and they pick you up. I mean, as long as you're willing to sit in the back of a pickup truck, you will never have to walk anywhere. And I felt like I'd adopted a cat that was miserable and was dying in my house because it was miserable, and the best thing I could do for the cat was to adopt it back to a home that would be better suited to the cat. So I sold the folding bike, and I felt kind of bad, but I sold it, got money for it. And the money I got for the folding bike, I used to buy a small outboard for my dinghy, which I never used that much. But and I guess that's a part of the surprised at what you do use and what you don't use story. It's a part of that because I tell you, in Salt Pond, Long Island, not in Calabash, there were a few places in Haiti where, no, not Haiti, it was all in the Bahamas, mostly Salt Pond, Long Island. Oh, in Georgetown. Where really, if you're rowing, and I row, my boat rows well, I row everywhere, I'm used to rowing, but man, there are just times where, depending on wind and current, if you don't have an outboard, you're not going. You're not going to get there.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that kind of surprises a lot of people that make the plans to use a rowing dinghy. Same thing with people who have, you know, a good-sized dinghy and a very small motor like the 2.3s on a 12-foot dinghy. Sorry.
You making fun of my dinghy? No, I'm kidding. I have a 3 horsepower. It's huge.
Yeah, but also your dinghy is a small dinghy.
Yes, that's true.
And you're not putting 7 people in it.
No, and it's a hard dinghy, so it glides very, very well. It does go well. Yeah, so I have, for anyone who's been to Georgetown, and I'm going to try to rip through this kind of quickly because we're up against another break. For anyone who's ever been to Georgetown and has dinghied under that little bridge to the dinghy dock, you understand what the currents do under that bridge. And this isn't really about currents out in the anchorage, in Elizabeth Harbor. That's really all about wind. It's not so much current. But when the tides are rising or falling and funneling through that little bridge in Georgetown, Bahamas, and you have the joy of rowing against the current while 9 people in motorized dinghies are sitting inside or outside staring at you, watching you because you have the right of way and get to go first, and you're rowing as absolutely fast as you can and barely doing better than standing still. It's hysterical. And just the impulse of the...
It's hysterical unless you're the rower, right?
Yeah, well, even as the rower, I'm like, hey, how's it going? I can't wave at you. I'm rowing as fast as I can, and I'm not sure if I'm going forwards or backwards. It's like... running 5 miles an hour on a treadmill that's going 5.2. You're like, I think ultimately this is net backwards. Okay, shockingly, I talk too much. Let's go take this quick break. You are listening to Postcards from Sea. We're going to take this and we'll be right back.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Welcome back to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, joined by Carolyn Sherlock and her Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Watermaker, and they are in Boot Key Harbor, Florida. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, John.
I'm making you self-conscious about the Watermaker, aren't I?
You are. You know what? I am just going to go forward into the forward cabin, and then I think I'll be a little bit further.
No, don't change a thing. Don't go changing to try to please me. Okay? All right, let it go.
Bad song references.
Just think of me as that kid brother that always says stupid things and teases you. That's all I'm doing.
Sorry, no kid brother.
I don't get technical on me. Okay, so I there's something else that has come up when you and I have had conversations a little bit as you were grilling me about my return to the States. I'm just kidding, you never grilled me. But buddy boating, and I get a lot of questions about that because I buddy boated with my friend Aldo Rosso, who was on sailing vessel Still Free, a Compass 30. I first saw him in Nassau in the Bahamas, saw him in Norman's Key, Bahamas, met him in Georgetown in the Bahamas. And I was rowing back one day, and there he was out in his cockpit as he so often was. Waves at me and says, "Hey, my friend, how are you? Where are you? Do you sail alone? Where are you going? I need to sail with someone." And that's what got poor Aldo hooked up with the likes of me, which sometimes I think he appreciated and sometimes he probably didn't. But buddy boating is an interesting thing, and it's many different things to many different people. And I'm wondering if you ever buddy boated.
You know, we never truly buddy boated. We, a few summers and for, you know, a week or two at a time, sort of maybe went in the company of some other boats, you know, good friends. We would sort of talk about, hey, tomorrow let's go over to such and such an anchorage, or I'm thinking I'd like to head over to such and such. But we never really have wanted to truly buddy boat, simply because, in other words, we didn't want to be where we were planning to go, leave at the same time, go at the same pace, etc.
Right.
A big part of it was that we did not want anybody relying on our weather judgments, nor did we want to rely on anybody else's.
Absolutely.
And it's
interesting. A friend of ours a little over a year ago, he and his girlfriend were heading to the Bahamas, and they were buddy boating with another boat. And, you know, thank God they were, because their boat sunk underway. And no life raft, only a very small rowing dinghy, which they deployed into, but it capsized, so they were just holding on to it. And, of course, in the middle of the dark night, they were picked up by their buddy boat. So, I mean, I can't say that there is necessarily anything bad about buddy boating.
I've been towed by my buddy boater when my engine wouldn't work. But here's this, specific to what you're saying, and I completely get and 100% agree with what you're saying, because none of us should ever rely on other people's interpretation of the weather, not only because they might be right, but they might be wrong, but also because their boat doesn't sail like your boat. They're not you. Their boat's not your boat. What might work for them doesn't necessarily work for you.
That's a huge one.
Yeah, no, that's very much it. So, and here's my rationalization, and I think that the buddy boating was a mixed bag for me, but all in all wonderful, because I just love my friend Aldo dearly. His boat's currently in Guatemala in Rio Dulce. We had to sort of part ways in Jamaica because I had to head back to make some repairs in the States. But what he and I both got from it, and I get the question a lot, am I going to buddy boat in the future? And I don't think I know the answer to that. I was, at the time, very unexperienced. Aldo was a lifelong sailor, but all pretty much river and lake sailing, so he was very comfortable in his sailboat, had never made offshore passages. I wanted to go to Haiti, and I wanted to do the Windward Passage, which he found intriguing but a little frightening. And we were both single-hander. So it made a lot of sense for us to sort of have some other one. So what you get to do with Dave, or what couples of any sort might have the luxury of doing, is to look at the other person in the morning and go, you know, this is what I'm getting from the weather. I don't like it. What do you think? Well, when you're on the boat by yourself, unless you talk to your plants, you don't have anyone to look at and say, I don't like this. What do you think? And that was an asset that was invaluable to me as a single hander, and as a rather novice single hander at that, and was one of the best parts of buddy boating. You know, whoever goes in the cut first can radio back, it's like this, it's like that. And it took a lot of the bigness out of the passage making that had been sort of an issue for me, and it was comforting in that regard.
Well, that was what I started to say, is I've never single-handed on a big boat, on a cruising boat. And I think my opinion would be very, very different were I single-handing. I think that I would still sort of want the veto power, and I'm going to make my own weather decisions. But, yeah, I think having somebody nearby and somebody sort of talk things back and forth with would be a huge difference.
Sure. I'm going to tell you a quick story about exactly that. And this is a story there. I was referring to Aldo and me as the odd couple by the end, and if anyone doesn't get that reference, I'm sorry. It was a Neil Simon play and later a TV show in the States about two single adult men who shared an apartment together. One was just single, I think the other one was divorced. It's irrelevant. But they were just very different, but they were the best of friends. I was in Isle aux Vaches in Haiti, where I was anchored with my friend Aldo. And Aldo was about over Haiti. I could have stayed in Haiti for two more months. But it was just, he was done with it. And he was just more driven to sail. I was driven for the cultural experience, and it was sailing that gets me there for that. And he was driven for the sailing. Neither one of those is right, nor is it wrong. But he was done, so we were looking at getting ready to go. And I really wanted to make it to Culebra in the Spanish Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. So we finally kind of had some weather that he had convinced me we were going to go east from Isle aux Vaches on the south coast of Haiti over towards Cabo Beata and anchor, I forget the name, on the south shore of Dominican Republic, and wait for the winds to die down so we could make it around the Cape and get up into the DR and clear in. And the morning that we were supposed to leave, pardon me, I listened to Chris Parker on the SSB in the morning I looked at whatever resources I had for weather. I looked at the route, and there was this voice in my head that was just going, no, absolutely not. This is stupid. And I called Aldo, who's over there on his boat getting ready to go, you know, like trimming sails, taking sail covers off and getting ready. And I called him on the radio, and I said, Aldo, either I'll drop my dinghy in the water and come to you, or you can drop your dinghy in the water and come to me, but we got to talk about this. And that's where that communication is so important, because Aldo's immediate response was, okay, I'll be at your boat in 5 minutes. His dinghy's on davits, a lot easier for him. So he dropped it down. It's an excursion for me. He dropped his dinghy down, came over, came on my boat, and I said, Aldo, I don't like the weather. I don't like the trip. I don't like the reason for the trip. I'm not going east. You can still go east without me. Always. You always can do anything you want to do. We're not married. We're buddy boating. And Aldo looked at me and said, no, if you don't want to go, we don't go. We make a different plan. And that worked, that aspect of it, that odd couple, regardless how much I might have perturbed him in certain ways or had different views about the world on certain things. Man, when push came to shove, we could sit down face to face and talk it out and say, no, it's hard enough to sail when you like the conditions. There's no need to go out there when you're completely uncomfortable with what you're going into. There's no reason to do it. And we had that veto authority, veto power. We both had it. Anybody on any given day could just say, no, I don't like this in any way. I'm not going to do it. And so kudos to Aldo for stepping up, not to mention for towing me back into Anse-du-Nord, Haiti when my engine died, when we were trying to motor around the south into the trades under the katabatic winds. But that is the good part of buddy boating.
It's the good part if it actually works that way.
Of course. And that's what I mean. Yes, I agree. And I don't know how inclined I would be to buddy boat now. Maybe, you know, a trip, hey, you know, we want to go from here to here. Oh, I'm going in the same direction. You know, I'll leave tomorrow too. I think that looks good. You know, and maybe you get to the same anchorage as them and have a cocktail. But that's not quite buddy boating. That's sort of just saying out loud where you're going and ending up in the same place. But I will tell you, as I was learning how to do offshore passages, as I was learning and failing and succeeding in doing all this, man, it was nice to have another voice on the VHF radio at 2 o'clock in the morning if things weren't going well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a huge one.
Yeah, that's it. So like I said, I don't know next time because I'm more comfortable with those passages.
So now I know it's your show, but I'll ask you one question.
Go ahead.
Having done single-handed, uh-huh, having done buddy boated,
uh-huh,
and having done passages with crew,
yeah,
what's kind of your preference at this point?
Oh, I'm going to give you such an...
Or they're all good in different ways.
An annoying non-answer. Yeah, they're all good in different ways. I find buddy boating of the three, in my experience, the most cumbersome because obviously there's just the most moving parts to coordinate. Two people, two boats, two systems, two engines, two sets of sails, two everything.
And if you don't move at the same speed.
Oh, and we don't, because my boat's displacement is 7 tons. Aldo's boat weighs 7,000 pounds. I mean, I'm twice the weight in the same length of boat. So in 8 knots of tailwind, still free, takes off like a frightened kitten. And Ave kind of sits there with her arms crossed, pouting in the corner going, no, I'm not going to go. So, yeah, that was very, very different. But and that we'd agreed on, too. We're like, we go. You don't slow down for me. I don't speed up for you unless somebody's having a problem. You know, those VHF radios go a good long ways. Crew for me, my buddy Larry was, I say my buddy. Now, I'd never met him before he came down to crew for me. He responded to an ad. I liked his attitude. Crew for me was such a luxury. Although we were both tired when we got to Florida, which was mostly because we had squalls the last two nights. There wasn't a lot of sleep the last two nights because it was pretty frisky. But we got in, you know, Larry was wiped. And although I was wiped too, I was so much less exhausted than any other leg. So this 9-day leg for me was so much easier, you know, than the 51 hours to Jamaica where I was hallucinating, or the 31 hours from the North Peninsula to the South Peninsula in Haiti. I kind of felt like I'd, you know, just come back from the spa. I'm like, the boat's clean. I've been eating home-cooked food every day. Everything's under control. I'm not hallucinating. So crew is a pretty spectacular thing. But another spectacular thing is sitting in that cockpit. Like when I sailed from West Palm Beach, Florida, up to Charleston outside in the stream, a few weeks ago on my way as I'm going back towards the Chesapeake. And I tell you, I sat up there that first night. I was in the cockpit. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. I think it's the most stars I've ever seen, in American territorial waters. There was a good breeze. Ave was clipping along at 9 and 10 and 11 knots consistently. Autopilot or the wind vane was doing the work. And I just sat there going, God, it doesn't get any better than this. And I'm sitting in the cockpit playing the ukulele, singing poorly, and thinking that it's about as good as life can get. So I really do think they're all good. And it depends on where you are, where you're going, and what you need from it.
Yeah.
That's the best I can do.
I haven't done any single handing, so I can't say it, but certainly been basically, sitting in the cockpit by myself. And I mean, on a gorgeous night, and when there's wind, gorgeous. God, I love it.
Yeah. So I will wrap up the show with this thought. I don't surf. I've never surfed. I don't think I've ever stood on a surfboard. But I've lived by the water a lot, including 10 years on the Outer Banks in North Carolina, where everybody, except for me, surfs. And I would always look at them and go, I don't understand why you guys go out there and try to surf, because you spend 9 hours floating on that damn thing, paddling because you think a wave's coming, and the wave doesn't come, and then you paddle back out again. You wait all damn day and you do nothing. Kind of like fishing. That's how fishing always struck me. So I'm like, oh, great fun standing on the beach, throwing that stupid hook in the water 10,000 times and going home with an empty bucket. And then I had those days when the boat clicked and the winds were right and the waves were right and I was right and the sail trim was right and Ave just took off like a deer running through the woods. And I thought, oh, this is the sailing equivalent of why they wait for the wave. The reason I motor through crap or sail to windward when I really don't want to, or take waves crashing over the bow, is not because those days are fun. It's because one of those days is going to be one of these days when it all clicks and it is absolutely heavenly.
And it takes those really crappy days to develop the skills so that when everything is going well, you can make it better.
You are absolutely right. It does, indeed. So, awesome. Yeah, good question. Sailing is awesome. Single-handing is awesome. Good crew is awesome. Bad crew, good luck. And I have friends who've been through that, but that is perhaps a subject for another day. My show always runs long, but that is it for this time. So a huge thank you to Carolyn Sherlock of The Boat Galley, The Boat Galley Cookbook, theboatgalley.com, Boat Galley on Facebook, Boat Galley on Instagram. I thank you very much for taking an hour out of your day to listen to me prattle on about things. I hope we get to do it another time.
Hey, thanks for having me on, John. I've really enjoyed this. This is a fun conversation. And yes. Continue your trip north safely.
I shall. Thank you so much.
And with fun.
Without a doubt. Also, I'd like to thank Mike McDowell and Boat Radio for hosting the show. Thanks to D Imperfection for that awesome theme song. And thanks, as always, to all of you for listening, for your support, for messages on Facebook, on Instagram, and for those beers that you buy me while I sail around. They're delicious, and you guys are all awesome. Without you, there is no podcast. I'll be back soon with another episode. And until then, be well and be happy.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland. And now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.